Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast, and yet again I'm on my own. No, I'm not really kidding. Last week, Steve, I did the Weekend Podcast on my own because I had lots to talk about and there's no one here. You were in Malta, Paddy was in Belgium. And Pete was in West Wales, kissing and cuddling, I think. I don't know. Maybe he is.
Why is it? Why is Paddy in Belgium?
Well, exactly. That's the question, isn't it? Why Belgium? Of all, in fact, you know, the last time I went to Belgium was with Paddy. We were doing like Capital Radio, 95.8, and we were doing a promo for like either EasyJet or Ryanair, and they're opening more routes. It was cracking. It was literally 7 days, 7 cities. Or 5 days, 5 cities, I think it was. But we went to Venice, went to, did you go to Rome? I don't know. But we went to Belgium and went to the Grand Place there. And it was amazing. At night, they liked this sort of the old town. The town hall there is very Gothic looking. And everything goes dark. And every sort of, every 2 hours, you do this thing. But, and then they start playing music and lights. It was a light show. And the music was brilliant. That's the only thing I remember about Belgium. And eating some, because you've got to eat, apparently, they chips on there, they're French frites with, do you know what sauce I like it with, Steve, in Belgium?
Tomato ketchup.
No, it's not that, actually. Okay. They have it with mayonnaise. Mayonnaise. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's a million miles off.
Yeah, well, if you said to me, right, Steve on a burger, yeah, what do you want your burger, Steve? Oh, I'll have tomato ketchup. I come back with mayonnaise on it. Like I said, I'm not a million miles off, Steve. You say, get out of here. That's not what you're
on the condiments chart. Ketchup pretty much sits next to mayonnaise, isn't it?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. It's in the condiments chart. You've got tomato sauce, and maybe you've got barbecue, and maybe you're going over to brown sauce. Where's the white coming in? I know the salad.
Well, no, it's more if you go to a pub, you always get the ketchup and mayo. They're the standard table condiments, aren't they? The others are usually extras.
But that's because they're contrasting, isn't it? Because people fit like ketchup, they maybe like mayonnaise, you know? Mm. I always got a bit of salad cream, I think, didn't I? But salad cream is the working class person's mayonnaise, isn't it, really? And it tastes a bit nicer, stronger, I think. Mayonnaise is a little bit bland. If you have garlic mayonnaise, it's nice. But, I mean, that's hardly a cultural revolution, is it? You have your French frites with a bit of mayonnaise. Wow, what a breakthrough. It's just with sauce, essentially. And moules. You know what moules are, Steve?
Moules? No.
I think I'm saying that right. Mussels in white wine sauce, they have that as well. They serve that, and you have French frites. That's always that's I think.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is, Belgium and West Wales have internet. I understand you. I'll give you an excuse there, Steve, because you're working in the House of Streams in Malta. Mm. It's like this gamers edition of, what is it, Big Brother, I suppose. How did that go anyway? Any good?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, well, ironically, we obviously probably had the best internet connection going, really, because we had a big fibre pipe, like, drilled into the house that we were doing it in, but I literally just had no time to do it. I was sleeping about 4 hours a night. It was pretty intense, to be honest. So
I was going to say, how many people? Because that I know. Did you say that there was a guy, one guy financing this, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Quite a well-off guy, because that's. I mean, you know, you think it's quite a low budget Big Brother, but it's not. You know, they've got so many cameras, so much. Big Brother itself costs hundreds and hundreds of thousands.
Oh yeah,
you know?
and also staffing costs. Because you compare it to like a TV production where it's filmed and recorded. Obviously, you can just stop and finish the day. This was it wasn't 24 hours a day, but we were streaming 24 hours a day. But it was pretty much good 16, 17 hours a day. And we had a crew of about 30 people. So it was pretty, not enough roles to kind of, do split shifts. So it was pretty all day long, pretty much. Yeah. So, but, it worked. It was good. It was just done on a bit of a budget. Well, I say a budget, it still cost a load to do, but you realise how much, things like Big Brother must cost ridiculous amounts of money to do.
Yeah. Probably a couple of mil, isn't it?
Yeah, at least, yeah.
But, do you know what the budget was for that?
I do, but I'd probably not... going to share it because it's not my business. Not my business to share that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, but what, did you get? Was the did you, did you, were you aware if the guy was pleased with the outcome or not?
Yeah. No. It all went wrong. But wrong. So that's the wrong thing to say. It all went well.
Yeah, you enjoyed that.
No. Do you know what? It was actually quite a good reality show because the people they put in there were like streamers, so they're naturally good at talking anyway. So you weren't just putting randoms in the house that. We're going to not get on. They weren't going to cause too much hassle, but we knew that because, it's their kind of job to, get on with things. So, and they actually all got on really well and they've all left like best friends. So it was actually a very, rather than ones where there's arguments and big tiffs and things going on, it was just nice to watch something where you just saw like a big friendship going on and that's some really big characters in there. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed watching and working on it, actually.
Yeah, what was the goal of it then? Did you have a winner or what? What's going on there?
Yeah, so they were playing games. So there's like daily challenges, and you'd get points for each challenge, and then the overall winner would win a Bitcoin.
A Bitcoin? Okay.
Yeah, just a single Bitcoin, which went up in price by about $8,000 from the beginning of the show to the end of the show. So yeah, the winner won about $30,000.
That sounds like where Bitcoin is. It's it's 30,000. Why can't I get it's not loading. Yeah, it's 30. Oh, black. $30,000 there. Yeah. Okay. You're marvellous stuff. We've got a new paragola, Steve. You know what a paragola is?
Yes, I do. It's those wooden things with no ceilings in the garden.
Well, no, we got a ceiling. No,
isn't it called a pergola?
A pergola. So, yeah, I can't even say it. Paragola, yeah.
Is that a posh word, isn't it?
Yeah. But Paddy's joined in, is he?
I think this is a start.
You haven't, Pad.
Hey, Pad.
I was just waiting for a moment to add something.
Okay, well, we got this pergola, right? It's nice. We put it together. God,
pagoda.
Pagoda's a Chinese thing, isn't it? A pergola. It's like a posh gazebo, essentially. It goes over the part of the patio. But whenever me and Megan have to DIY together, it gets really nasty. She really has a go at me, and and I try and laugh it off, but really, because I try and just shove things in, force things in. She said, no, right, now we do it, break it. But we did it in the end, but it was knackering because it was in the heat. And it's got a flip roof, so you twist the things. The roof's two parts of the roof. You can open the roof, little slats open up, all shut.
Have a roof then?
Yeah, so we've got patio furniture under there. So the problem was, what I hate you doing, whenever you'd forget about the weather forecast, you'd rush out and get all the cushions off the patio furniture because it's like a sofa kind of thing, And now I don't have to do that because you shut the roof. But we haven't had rain for ages, have we? So I'm checking the forecast.
You have got an inside dining room, though, haven't you?
We're not sitting there, are we? It's not nice outdoors, it's just a nicer space. But, but anyway, listen, we've had but 2 weeks of no rain, so I just give up checking the weather forecast. And last night I didn't shut the roof there. And the first time ever we needed to shut the roof, I didn't shut the roof. All the cushions stuck around again. Hang on a sec. We've been a couple of grand for this thing, and I missed out. So, anyway. So
why didn't you just close it every night? Surely that's the obvious thing to do.
I was closing every night, but like I said, it was so hot sometimes, isn't it? It was ever going to rain again. And I think people were caught up this morning. I took Monty on the school run. I could see people, it was a bit chillier this morning, wasn't it? People were wearing shorts and T-shirts. Hang on, it's like 15 degrees. But here we are. Go on.
Anyway.
Yeah, where are you home, Pat? Are you away? What are you doing?
I'm in Belgium, West Belgium.
Are you really in Belgium?
No.
Oh, I was going to say. Because I said, this will test you. The last time I went to Belgium, finish that off. Mm. What I said at the top. Yeah, Pat?
You embarrassed yourself.
No, I didn't say that. No. I said, last time I went to Belgium was with Paddy. Do you remember that, Pad?
Was it like, did we go to Belgium?
Yes.
That's very memorable.
I'm saying I remember we saw the little guy weeing in the fountain. We saw
the mannequin pee.
The Grand Place where they had music and a light show on the town hall, And we had some moules in white wine sauce and some chips with some mayonnaise. You know, some,
I don't remember that in any shape. I don't remember any element of that.
No. Well, that's Belgian for you, though, isn't it? It's,
I remember. Where did we? Venice. I remember we stayed in a very fancy hotel in Venice together, didn't we? It was very romantic.
Yeah. And, what was quite nice, we left from the airport of Venice.
Oh, yeah.
A water taxi. It was like a motorboat, basically. You leave the airport right on the water, Steve. You'd rather get a normal taxi. You get a water taxi into Venice. It was so cool.
We went to Dublin.
Yeah, Dublin, that's right. Where else?
Amsterdam. You went missing in Amsterdam for about half an hour, didn't you?
Yes. Well, I think you spiked my drink. But, yeah, came back dressed as a lady with piercings and tattoos. There we are. Anyway, boys, as far as financials are concerned, right, it's the end of Q2. It's the end of H1 2023. It's been a bloody awful 6 months.
I unchecked my portfolio.
Don't check it, Stephen.
I didn't check it at all in Malta. Then one of you mentioned on the group is looking a bit dire, and I couldn't believe how much it's dropped down. That was a quite depressing thing to end the work trip.
Yeah, well, if you look at the FTSE 100, it's literally held its own. It's gone nowhere. It's 0.13% for the 6 months. The FTSE 250, which is more homegrown, sort of, you know, FTSE 100, more international companies like Shell, BP, they, you know, all around the world, and they sort of, most of their trade is done in dollars and stuff. And all that, but FTSE 250 and more sort of UK-based bigger companies, and that was down 2.6%. But the AIM All share down 9.5% for the 6 months, and literally it's down now 43% down, 42% down since the high, which was the high. Do you remember the high? It was literally 659 days ago. That is nuts, isn't it? 659 days ago. That's crazy. That's it's almost 2 years into a bear market. It does seem, you can see why people give up, can't you? Because you think, this is never going to turn around, is it? It's never going to turn around, ever. It will, though. And in fact, you know, now is the time to make good money. Or sooner, probably. It's next. In fact, let's put a date on it, guys. When do you think the market's going to enter a bull market? Because the Nasdaq is already, which is obviously the big American tech indices, is in a bull market. It's up like 33% from its low, which is crazy. No, 35% actually from its low. That's down to the big AI stocks. You know, AI. Stephen Pat, I'll write it down here. Predictions for the start of a bull market on AIM. When do you reckon, guys? That's 20%. A bull market is 20% from the low. And where are we? We are literally, it hit new lows this week, AIM. It was, you know, October lows were, on AIM All Share was 775. We're now at 753. And so this week we've entered new lows. So when do you think, boys, when do you think we're going to start a bull market, eh?
I don't know. What's going to change things from a macro perspective here?
Well. In fact, exactly.
A new Labour government might do, but we've got to wait maybe up to a year for that. Rejoining the single market might, well, sentiment, right? Like the whole country is in absolute doldrums because of these bunch of shysters that are continuing to screw things up. We need a new hope. We need a new outlook.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I do know what I think is. I don't know if you saw that. I did a little tweet here, right? And I don't know if you know the difference between this, but I said, now, central bankers, they all met up this week. All the central bankers, which are like the big boys. So it's like the Fed, he's the main man. Jerome Powell, then Andrew Bailey from the UK, then Christine Lagarde, I think, from the European Central Bank. You had a Japanese guy, I don't know what his name is, but he was there. But they all met up in Portugali this week, in Portugal, to basically whinge and go on how gloomy the outlook is. And the fact that they're going to keep ramping up interest rates. That's what I'm saying. As if we want to hear that. So basically, they just all, it's almost like they all went backstage beforehand. Listen, so we all get on the same page here. Because we do want one of us saying, it's looking good. Because they want to bring, you know, inflation down. That's their main target. And they have one lever for that. And that's the interest rate lever. They're a big lever in their office. And it's, what's those levers used to have on old trams, isn't it? Something like that. Where you literally you know, clunk up the next clunk. Clunk! There we are. These clunks, the intervals are literally, you know, 0.10, 0.25, half a percentage point. And literally, they've been going half a percentage point every... Now, the Fed slowed down a little bit. They've got a 0.25. But all they've got is that clunky lever. Clunk! And that's all it is. It's as blunt as that. It's literally up or down. That's all they do, you know, central banks. They bang on about looking at data and stats and stuff. They don't. They just look at the inflation. Ooh, still high, isn't it? Whack it up, put the lever up in the clunk, you know. But what I'm worried about, right, is that do you understand why they're doing this? What's your understanding of this? Steve Padd, what's your understanding of why they're raising interest rates?
Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to understand, right, Steve?
Yeah. the more things cost, the less people spend.
Well, there you go. Bang. Bosh. Done it.
No, but that's inflation, isn't it? They're trying to stop inflation.
Oh, yeah. They're raising interest rates so that it is better to save than to spend.
Yep. Good.
The hope is that will force people to stop spending so much money, which will help bring prices down. It hasn't worked so far, though.
No. It started to work a little bit. We've got less acceleration. I mean, we were at 11.1% inflation-wise, now down to 8.7%. We're still the highest. Yay, well done, Britain.
Yeah, but how much of that is down to inflation itself? Right? So if the prices are going up, you spend less because the prices are going up.
That's what I'm saying. Inflation is almost cues itself a little bit, doesn't it? Because, like I said...
If
you go into the supermarket one day and a nice pot noodle, Steve's favourite pot noodle, is like sweet and sour. What's your favourite pot noodle, Steve?
I haven't had a pot noodle for like 10 years.
Oh, what was your favourite, though? Because when I was young, they only do a couple of flavours, right? They came out with... beef and onion, I think it was, or beef and something. Beef and tomato. And then they did chicken, I don't know what their chicken combination
was. Did they do a curry one? I think it was
a
curry
one. No, they did for a while. It's like anything. For ages, right? Even crisps. It's the same old flavours for years. And then you got someone else coming to the market. Like, you know, there was the Golden Wonder was the big guys at the time. And then Smith's Crisp came in and they said, oh, hang on. And they started introducing new flavours. Well, hang on. About time, isn't it? All we had for years was pretty much... cheese and onion, ready salted, and salt and vinegar. That was it. That was your basic three. You didn't need any more. That was the 80s. That was a good time. That wouldn't have pushed inflation up because, you know, you get so sick of those flavours, you wouldn't buy any more. But it was like that with pot noodles. You literally had chicken and something. I don't know what the combination was.
How have we got here?
Anyway, I'm just saying. So, and my favourite, right, when they brought out, after they were hit pot noodles, I remember at the time they bought 60 pence, they were, and my nan said, that's very expensive, isn't it, for a meal? And it was at the time. You remember that's inflation. Why is 69 pence was expensive at the time. You could get things, you know, a lot of things with 69 pence. You'd buy a car and a carpet. Well, you couldn't really. But I remember they come up with sweet and sour. And I thought, oh, that's a business, that is sweet and sour. That's a business, right? So it's like going to the supermarket, isn't it, one day, and you see, you know, a pot noodle is now, I don't know what they are, quid, 50, £2. And then you go in the next day, and it's like, you know, £7. You're like, well, I'm going to stop buying that. It's ridiculous. Inflation in itself... does cure inflation. You know, it's like same with oil prices. When oil prices go up so much, all of a sudden people don't use so much petrol. They just cut back. They don't do silly trips to the shops so they can walk there. So yes, but then what they're doing, of course, they're not happy with that. They think, oh no, that's not going to cure itself, because it can go on rampant for ages, because you get wage inflation as well, and it embeds, because then people will obviously get more money, so they just spend more, so it keeps pushing up prices. So they need to say, right, the only simple way they can do it, right, is by killing the economy. That's all they can do. They won't say that, but they have to do that, and that's what they're doing. That is exactly what they're doing. So they put interest rates up, and from a personal perspective, you're right, Pad. People who have mortgages or loans or anything like that, who have to take out loans, will think twice about getting a new car if they ever get financed, and all of a sudden the finance is at 7%, you know, when it was at 2%, or mortgage as well, or you won't do credit cards and all that stuff to spend. You won't splash out so much. You won't put so much stuff on the credit card. You know, you won't put a holiday on the credit card. You won't do all that sort of stuff. You know, you go for essentials. So you slow down your buying activity. Now, a lot of companies have debt. You know, they refinance the debt quite often. And if they ever refinance that debt, all of a sudden, that's more expensive. That's going to come off their profits. Some of them will take them into a loss. Or they can't afford to, you know, carry a new debt. So they have to, what do we do here? What's the, you know, first of all, we've got people buying less of our products, and also it's costing less. Energy's costing more. Everything's costing more. Our loans are costing more. So we lay off people because they're expensive, people are. Let's get rid of them. And then those people go on the dole. They got less spending power. They buy less, and then all of a sudden, they don't go to the supermarket so much, whatever. And then the supermarket says, well, in fact, we're selling even less now. Let's lay off more people. And then those people then can't buy it. So it's like a vicious circle here of slowing down the economy. And this, it doesn't happen. You can't just... That lever, they'll realise, gets stuck at the top then. The inflation starts coming down very quickly because the economic activity slows down. You're like trying to stop a super tanker, and you're like, you know, 10 yards away from the shoreline, and you realise you're in top gear. You're like, oh, my God. So literally you have to whack it in reverse as fast as possible. That is what's going to happen with the stock market, right? Guarantee it. The central bankers will over-tighten. They'll over, you know, they'll kill the economy too much. And they can't just reverse it. All they can do is whack the lever in reverse. That's all they can do. Whack that lever back in reverse and bring interest rates back down. The stock market will rally. But so it'll be that sound. And so they keep saying they'll keep interest rates higher for longer. Will they have the balls and the bottle to keep interest rates high when literally people are being laid off, you know, in the hundreds of thousands or in the millions in the UK and in the USA? I don't think they will, because they are killing people's livelihoods. The only thing they can do then is ease up on the interest rates. So they're telling lies. They're BSing about they'll hold them up there for longer. But you know what? That is not what the bond market is saying. And the bond market is always right. So you've got central bankers lying, the bond market is right. The bond market is saying that interest rates will be reduced very quickly by 2024. And so yeah, but they say, yeah, it's good, isn't it? You say, well, who is telling the truth, guys? Central bankers, you guys, or the bond market, which doesn't have really any emotion, you know. What do you reckon? And I'll give you an example, right? And I said this to Pete, I think, week before last. Have you ever heard about the yield curve inversion? Have you ever heard of that,
Steve? I've heard of it. No idea what it is.
Yes. Well, governments are in debt, pretty much. And governments, of course, they have to pay debt and bonds. The yields on bonds, the what they pay people who loan the money, that's gone up as well. So to maintain government debt now is very expensive. So it's costing the government. Government's got the biggest amount of debt, you know, than any other individual company in this country, probably. So it's costing them more than anyone else. So they're in pain as well, but they don't really care. It's not their money. But they issue bonds, right? And that's where they get money from, to pay for things. Because they haven't got the money because they're in deficit all the time. They spend more. The government spend more than they save, pretty much, than they take in. You know, so they're always in deficit. So, but the bonds go up. So generally, you can get, you know, they loan you money for 2 years, 10 years, 5 years, 30 years, whatever. But the longer term they loan you money for, the more interest they'll pay you for that, because it's a bigger risk for you. That's what should happen. So, in fact, if I look now, I'm trying to make bonds sound exciting here, but they're very, you know, they're very prescient. They can tell you what's going on. So if you look at the government 30-year yield, okay, where are we at? It'll pay you 4.4%, right? Now, everything else, shorter duration, like 20 years, 10 years, should be less than that. All right, so, and typically the 10-year yield is 4.3%. Now, the 2-year should be below that, of course, but it's not. The 2-year is 5.271%. It hit a high today. It was literally, these yields were zero 2 years ago. They're now paying 5.2%. That's how much risk there is there. So what does that say? So basically, if you plot the yield of the 2-year against the 10-year, you'll see the 2-year is up higher than the 10-year. And so that's going on the chart. If you look at the chart, it's going from top left to bottom right. That's called the inversion of the yield curve. So they draw a line from the yield of the 2-year down to the 30-year. It shouldn't be like that. It should be the other way around. And this doesn't happen very often. And in fact, when it does happen, it's quite accurate that there's a recession. In fact, how accurate? The last 10 times it's happened, there's been a recession. So it's pretty much spot on, isn't it? When I said this last time, I said, if you bet me in a game of darts that I couldn't hit, you know, the 20, and I did it 10 times in a row, it'd be a good chance I could do it for 11th time, you know? So I'm quite good at it. And that's the yield curve. And you know what? Central bankers and economists are not as good, anywhere near as good as predicting recessions as the yield curve. The yield curve even inverted before the pandemic. Some people have said it was fluke, but we had a quick recession there, very fast recession. How did the yield curve know that? I don't know. because it shouldn't have done, because it wasn't even predicted. It wasn't an economic slowdown until, because that, how fast was the pandemic? How fast did the COVID spread around the world before we shut the economy down? It was only a few months, wasn't it? Like March or something. Was that right? November it came out, didn't it? When did we start learning about the COVID thing?
Christmas time.
Yeah, Christmas. And then we had the first shutdown in March, was it? Something like that? Yeah, that's yeah. So already it started inverting. So that's phenomenal. And now it's inverting again. And the worrying thing is, it's inverted more than it's ever inverted since the 1980s right now. That, to me, says there's something wrong, big style wrong, with the economy, and we are going into a major recession. And all the bankers can do, literally, when we go headlong with this recession, and it's going to be a biggie, I think, judging by the yield curve, all they can do is yank that lever backwards as fast as they can and bring down interest rates. What does that mean for the stock market? Means it'll rally like crazy. I thank you. That's it.
Look forward to that day happening.
Yeah, because I mean, at the moment, all you're seeing is you're seeing the opposite of what will happen. What has happened, you know, from the bull run from 2009, the great financial crash, up until 2021, 2022. What has happened there? That was the opposite of what's happening now. What happened now? They are literally sucking liquidity out of the markets. You know, they're quantitative tightening and interest rates. So in fact, there are two levers, really. Quantitative tightening is a bit of dark art there. They're just sucking money out and interest rates. And so that's the opposite. But then, of course, what will happen now, if you start crashing, the opposite will happen again. We'll go back to really loose money. Money starts going back into the market. It's literally just switching the taps back on. Right now, they're choking the tap down. There's a little drippers coming out. And all the people in the markets are saying, quick, give us some more water. I'm thirsty, Mr. Central Banker. They said, no, we're not. We're not. We'll make sure inflation dies along with you and your investors. So, but soon they'll have to. Because almost like saying, almost the platform they're standing on, the legs will be kicked from underneath it. So they'll have to open the taps back up. And I don't know when that would be. I think it'd be faster than they realise. But I think I'm predicting, because by the way, when the yield curve inverts, the recession happens within 1 to 2 years. And when did the current yield curve invert? Inverted in July 2022. So now we're in a year on. So within a year, on average, and that's maximum, there'll be a recession. And the central bank, I'd be surprised if central banks don't do something to stop people losing their jobs and industry falling out of bed. Because their jobs are, they've got two mandates, central banks. One is stable prices, the other is maximum employment. And let's be honest, maximum employment is more important than a bit of price instability, because people are losing their lives and livelihoods. That's important, isn't it? You know?
Yes. I think Pad's gone, hasn't he?
Paddy! He's on mute. Maybe he's gone to sleep or something.
I mean,
bastard.
Maybe that was quite a statement there.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Pat. Thanks for that. He just does that, doesn't he? He's still there. Brexit, his mic's on mute.
He's probably gone to the toilet or something.
Yeah, he's probably making love to the other half. What's he called? Yeah. Jeff, isn't it?
Jeff, yeah, that's it.
Okay, Steve, I'm going to do now. I'll pitch you three companies, right? And you're going to ask me some questions about them, right? By the way, I said central bankers yesterday said they were going to keep raising rates. What's the biggest risk from this going forward? I put this in a survey. They don't stop inflation, they create deflation. Deflation could happen, but honestly, it'll pick up very quickly. And that's a bigger worry than inflation, because, of course, once the prices start going down, why would you want to buy anything? You know, if you're going to get a car cheaper 6 months down the line, or a dishwasher, or whatever you want to get, don't buy it. Anyway, Steve, right, I'll give you some questions, right? I'll give you three stocks, right? I'll pitch you three stocks quickly. And I'm going to give you 10 grand, right? You've got 10 grand. You have to. You can only have this 10 grand if you invested in one or all of these companies, all right? So you can choose.
One or
two or three. You know, three stocks, right?
Okay.
So you've got to work out the risk-reward on these. And ask me any questions. Number one is a clinical stage, innovative biotechnology company focused on the development and commercialization of novel medicines that can prevent life-threatening infections. Okay, market capitalization there is 25 million. Number two, a green energy supplier to retail clients. They also fit solar panels and heat pumps, plus they own a stake in something called ZapMap. a UK-wide map of electric car charging points where you can pay through, and you can reserve these, locate, navigate the nearest EV point. Drivers can search and filter for electric car charging points, as well as plan electric routes. Okay, that's a 29 million market cap. Or number three, a leading global manufacturer of utility-grade energy storage. They manufacture vanadium flow batteries. They have a 92 million market cap. Ask me any questions. One, two, or three, Steve. Well, the first one is obviously a biotech company.
I don't think I would go into the biotech trials, only just because we've been stung on them before. So, and I don't really understand it. Mm. Number two sounds quite good. Obviously, I understand that side, and obviously a very grown business, still many, many years to come of growth, I guess, in that. What was the third one again?
Third one's a leading global manufacturer of utility-grade energy storage. They manufacture vanadium flow batteries.
So they're a battery company?
They energy storage for utilities. So obviously, big companies who need storage quickly or energy quickly, or, say, the grids, national grids.
Okay. So it's not a consumer-based company?
No, it's business to business, really, or business to to government, or, you know, or national grid. National people, they want a national grid.
Okay. I don't know what questions to ask you.
Well, you can ask me things like, how much cash does this company have? Is it generating revenue? Is it pre-revenue? Is it loss-making? Is it profitable?
Why didn't you just tell me that?
Okay. Well, the first one is a pre-revenue, clinical stage innovative biotech company, right? They have three broker targets, separate broker targets, okay? The average of which is now 900% above the current target price. The second one, so obviously it's pre-revenue. That means it's loss-making as well. They have 10 million in cash. They have 25 million market cap. The second one, the green energy supply to retail clients, and fit for solar heat pumps as well, 29 million market cap. But in last financial results, 17 million of cash. They are profitable. And the third one is they do generate revenue, but they're loss-making at the moment. But their revenue is forecast to grow massively over the next 3-4 years. For example, revenue this year will be 22 million. That's up from 3 million in 2022. In 2024, 30 million. 2025, 134 million from 2025, and then 2026 forecast 215 million. Now, the middle one, the green energy supplier, they are profitable and forecast to say double, at least, and they're a bit more safe, but the upside is less. So there's less risk there, but less reward. Now, the first one, the biotech company, is a bit more risky, but massive reward, and the leading global manufacturer, utility grade. It's also quite risky because they've got about 12 months of cash. They just raise money. They had no problem raising money because we're talking about a high-demand area. I mean, when people generate solar and wind energy, where does it go? Unless you use it straight away, and most of it isn't, you've got to store it. So where do you store it? Batteries. Now, that's going to be growing as well. So you've got 10 grand, Steve. Put some money in those.
I wouldn't put any in the first one.
Right. You wouldn't want to see a potential three brokers with a 10-bagger.
No, I just don't understand it. And I think, this is personal. I just don't invest in things I don't understand.
Well, that's the same as Buffett. I mean, you and him are very similar, Steve.
Yeah, it's very similar, see? Second one, I get what you're saying about there was more upside on the third one with the battery storage. I would probably put 6 in the second one, the one that does the solar and heat pumps, and then 4 in the third one, the battery storage one.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah, yeah. Well, why didn't you put just a grand in the first one? Because you never know, Steve. Because you could get 10 grand back on that, and then the second one. I'm just putting the second one 6 grand.
I could do, but I've decided not to.
That's risk rewards. So the second one, so you put 6 grand in, right? So if you double that, of course you get 12 grand, but you put 6 grand in, but you can get 10 grand off 1 grand for the first one, and the third one, it's probably a triple, a fourer, maybe more than that actually going forward. In fact, those companies are, of course, Destiny Pharma, Good Energy, and Invinity Energy Systems. and I own a little bit of stock in each. And there are different risk rewards. Like Good Energy, ridiculous valuation. They are profitable. They are doing $300 million worth of revenue. Their margins are quite small, but they've changed the business model. They used to own wind farm stuff. They sold that. And now they have 1,700 suppliers of their energy from wind, solar, all around the country. And they've also supplied that to their customers, about 270,000 people. But they also support two businesses, because they've got plenty of cash, that supply heat pumps and solar. So now they can just say to their 270,000 customers, oh, by the way, rather than not just supplying you good energy now, real green energy, it's not greenwash at all. They are one of the original companies. In fact, they started doing this before anyone else, pretty much, in the UK. The thought of renewables was 15 years back before it was even hardly talked about. And so now they say, oh, not only can we supply you 100% renewable energy, we can save you money. You can generate your own money, own energy via solar, and you can cut down on energy use by heat pumps. And in fact, you can use the solar for the heat pumps, all that stuff. And you can charge your car as well. And you can zap map and you can find out where they're. So yeah, but literally ridiculous. Their market cap, just now they come up with a trading update, right? They've announced they've got 38 million of cash. Now, their market cap is 30 million. So wow, and they're profitable. They're not even valued on cash, below cash, it's nuts. So their net asset value is 38 million. And yet they're just, so basically if you broke the company up, you should have 8 million profit. But yet they are profitable. It doesn't make any sense. So their valuation is nuts, crazy. And I think when you buy in companies like that, that is called a value play, but also some growth there. Because their business now, going forward, they sold their old when they used to have power generators themselves, they only used to generate about 15%, I think, of their customers' needs. So they got rid of that and said, okay, let's just use companies, people who generate renewable energy and supply that to customers. But yeah, it's amazing. So their business model now would be better because the supplying services is a better model, more margin. So yeah. But Invinity, like Destiny Farms' first one, is amazing. I mean, like I said, that target, by the way, 900% up, is only on their first asset, which is going into phase three. Their second asset is double the potential. So that target there could even double again. Could actually 2,000% up broker targets if they get a partner. They likely do get a partner. It's been knocked recently because the CEO stepped down. A new CEO has come in interim with more experience than the old CEO. And it's just been the share price taking a knock, which is annoying. But the third one is very interesting, Steve. When you research companies, you learn a lot, Do you know about vanadium?
No.
Most batteries are lithium-ion, aren't they? Lithium-ion. We all know about that in cars and all that stuff. And they're quite energy-dense. So you can get a lot of power out of a small battery, like the iPhones, they last for 24 hours. You can do a lot on them. Now, vanadium is not... You couldn't have a vanadium battery in your phone. You'd need a bigger battery. So why would you want vanadium then? So that's why it's used for, they come in basically, the transport trailer, what's it called? What do they call it? You put on the back of ships, the carriers, those metal things you see on the back of lorries that go on ships, the containers, that's it. So they make them in containers basically, and they stack them. So depending on how much storage you want, just stack them, all right? Now, why vanadium? Because lithium ion degrades pretty much after 5 years. So the power and regeneration, you can't recharge it as well. Like your battery will start getting worse and worse. Vanadium stays fine for 25 years. So, and that's
around. So why can't they use? Is it only a large factor? Is that why we don't see it in phones?
So essentially, a lot of energy is wasted, right? All the solar and wind energy that's created is wasted. It's just gone. It's not stored. So lithium ion's a little bit more efficient. For example, I think if you put energy into a lithium ion, you'd get about, I think it's about 85% or 90% of the stuff you get. You get that out, it'll come out, it'll transfer. With vanadium, it's about 75%. But it lasts for 25 years, whereas with lithium ion only lasts for 5 years. So if you have to keep rebuying lithium ion batteries, what's more efficient in the long run? Vanadium, because you have to keep rebuying a whole new batteries with lithium. And it's also it's a fire problem. You've had lots of fires with lithium. If you get a lot of lithium stacked and it overheats, it catches on fire. Doesn't happen with vanadium. So and also not only that now, vanadium is becoming more efficient with it. So if you look at, over a 30-year period, if you're using a lithium-ion battery and a vanadium battery, the vanadium battery is more efficient because you don't have to replace it. You know, so
where does these materials come from then in the world?
That's another thing. Lithium ion, good question, Steve. Lithium ion, of course, lithium itself, there's a high demand for that because it's used in cars, you know, lorries. Vanadium is not, and it's as prevalent as copper. So it's more prevalent, it's more available than lithium. And so, yes, you won't get that price pressure, demand pressure, because it's only used for, like I said, what's called utilities, you know, grade. That means big applications. So, you know, massive solar farms, wind farms, all that stuff. So that's the kind of thing. So National Grid, for example, they're just going to deal with National Grid in the UK, you know, for long-duration storage, worth about 30 million. And that will happen more and more. You get, you know, big... Because you often see these, don't you? Wind farms along side of motorways and stuff. And there's more of them. Where's that energy going? Because unless it's used, it's lost. So it's got to be stored. And if you're on long-term storage, vanadium's the thing. It's not lithium, you know? So, And these are, oddly, Invinity are, like, literally a global leader in it. They are, if you do a search, and it's very rare when you see a company on AIM... And they've been around for 15 years. They're refining and refining, and they come out now with a new generation battery, which is even more advanced, and that will put them way head and shoulders above the competition. So it's taken a long time to get there, and they've burned a lot of cash. But they are, in 2025, they'll be profitable and really ramping up. They'll be absolutely world leader then. But
one to look out for.
Yes, absolutely. I think three to look out for there, Steve. Anyway, that's it. That's it. Gone over time here, but... All right, Stevie, have a nice... Any plans for the weekend?
No, just having a quiet one after getting back from Malta.
Okay, yeah. Did you make any new friends in Malta?
Yeah, lovely crew to work with, so, yeah.
Okay. Did any of the gamers, you know, find a partner or anything? Or
No, there's no love in the house. Okay. It was all gaming.
Right. Well, is it worth checking out then, a little, recap of that online?
Well, not... Well, you can't watch it back again because they purposely didn't do it on demand because they're making a four-part episode season out of it, so that will be released. Don't know where. Probably somewhere. I don't know. Mm. But, yes, they're currently editing that together now.
Okay, cool. House of Streams. Check it out. And that's it. Speaking next to Wiki, Stevie.
Bye-bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.